Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We might automatically think about money as the only treasure Jesus is referring. But it might be helpful for us to remember in these last couple of weeks what Jesus has been preaching about in his sermon. If we go back to the very beginning of Matthew chapter 6, we remember Jesus says, "Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from your Father in heaven. So whenever you give, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be praised by others. Truly I tell you, they have received their reward." And so we remember Jesus is lifting up people's practices of prayer and fasting as a way for them to gain attention from others. So we are reminded money is not the only danger of wealth. Jesus is maybe first and foremost talking about public displays. One pastor put it this way: what would stewardship campaigns and every member canvasses be without the hoopla of strategic planning, of grand meetings, of charts, publicly displayed thermometers, and the like? And of course, that's just an irregular, traditional kind of campaign. How are we supposed to do this now, in the midst of a pandemic, when no one is here, everything is virtual, and we are all scrambling around trying to get and to scrape people's attention? Last week, Warren Pattison, who is our adult education director, shared with us a study recently done by the Barna Group. Now, if you don't know the Barna Group, it is an organization that is famous for conducting surveys about the state of the church. So in one of their recent projects, they discovered that over half, 53% of people surveyed, said that they streamed their regular church online within the past 4 weeks. Another 34% admitted to streaming a different kind of church service other than their own, so going to a different church. And then finally, about one-third of practicing Christians surveyed say that they have done neither of these things. Now, we all know this. We feel this in some way. It is not new information. Because ever since the church has no longer been the only place open on Sundays, we have continually tried to figure out how we can be relevant to the world. In the world of the church professionals, there have been lots of comparisons the last several years with the success of certain businesses and how we need to model those practices. Practices like branding and visioning and purpose. I've lost count of how many times I've heard the church being compared to Blockbuster back in the day it decided not to join with Netflix. There is something to learn here, I think, the realization that we cannot be comfortable in the present, that we will not always be like this, that we will not just coast along in the success of being the only thing that we are supposed to do on Sunday. But on the other hand, if we emulate businesses too much, we can forget that the prime motivation of any business is to make money. Writer and public speaker Simon Sinek is famous for giving this diagram of how, what, and why. And that a lot of businesses and organizations are really good about talking about their what and about their how, but they're not as good as talking about their why. Why do they do what they do? Simon will often use the model of Apple Computers as an organization, as a business that is really good about explaining their why. So their what, of course, is in computers. And what Simon says is they are really good about not just being another company that says that they make really good computers, but they say that they change the world through making great computers. And that's a really good example. It's very dynamic. It's very innovative. It can maybe help us to know our own purpose, except it can be so good that we can forget that their why at the very end of the day is about making money. And so what does it mean that we are sending a message that in order to change the world, we should consume more products? The ultimate goal of any business is to make a profit. That is their goal. What is our goal? What is our treasure as a church? For the last few decades, the continual decline of the church has worried many of us into grabbing onto whatever magic bullet we can find. Consultants, coaches, experts, church planters, charismatic personalities, celebrity pastors, anyone we can put onto a stage and tell us the seven principles of how to fill your church back up. Only it hasn't worked. In the last 40 years, we have been trying to energize our pastors and our laity into cheerleaders for God, and it really hasn't gotten us anywhere. The church is still declining. Only now we have thousands of pastors and church members every year coming out of these conferences feeling even more deflated because we know in our hearts, I'll never be like that. The danger of wealth is not just the danger of money, but that we can try so hard to be something we are not supposed to be. That we try so hard to be something we are never going to be, that we were not created to be. The danger is not just wealth itself, but as Jesus gives us these examples of practicing actions in public like almsgiving, like prayer, like fasting, the danger is also the pursuit of wealth. The pursuit of looking like we are the ones everybody should be paying attention to. Because if we are so focused on being relevant, we may forget how to be the church. As Jesus says, you cannot serve both God and wealth. Now, that's not to say that we don't have work to do. One of the other reasons for the major decline in churches is that in many ways we have not leaned into who we are supposed to be. We have focused for so long on these other treasures that we have gravitated more into being an organizational institution, focusing on keeping ourselves open rather than being a community of diverse disciples who love God and who love each other. Another pastor once remembered a psychology professor asking the question, why do we so frequently forget the names of those to whom we are newly introduced? The answer, the professor said, is because we did not hear their names to begin with. When we were being introduced to them, we were so interested in the impression we ourselves were giving to listen to the name of the other person. And so the pastor goes on to say, what Jesus is teaching his disciples here on the mountain is the exact same kind of lesson. The very purpose of giving, of prayer, of religious observances, is to deliver us from the debilitating self-consciousness that dogs our lives. Salvation means to finally lose our precious selves to the other. The other who is the recipient of our giving, the other who hears our prayers, the other who wonders what our religion really comes to, if not just public promotion and self-display. In most of the days and hours of our lives, we are burdened with the thought of how we are being perceived. What will others think of me? When faith is true, Jesus affirms, we find ourselves, at least now and then, graciously liberated from the burden of self, and we are liberated for the other. That is the essence of faith. As Matthew and Lee were playing Be Thou My Vision, I was reminded of a contemporary version of the song that adds these lines. Be my compassion, my love for the poor. Break my distraction so I can't ignore the least of your children, the ones you adore. For by them, Jesus, I worship you, Lord. Perhaps our next stewardship campaign could simply be about giving a love gift to an unknown person instead of just being a spiritual transaction. Perhaps a way that we can truly grasp the reality of a vision like that is to see it from the top of a mountain. Or maybe we don't need to go all the way up to a mountain. Maybe we can see and experience that very same vision in our backyard. A friend of mine was telling me last week how all of this time being at home instead of being at work, they have noticed so many new things just in their backyard. At a time in the hours they would normally be at work, they have discovered how full of life their backyard truly has. What it is like to hear creatures they've never noticed before. An owl sitting in their tree. The way the grass feels under their feet. How the sun peers over their horizon. Sights and sounds, experiences that are being opened for the very first time now that all of these other demands and distractions are gone. It reminds me of a line Charles Dickens writes in his classic book, A Christmas Carol, when the spirit of Christmas past takes Scrooge to the time that he grew up in a boarding school. Dickens writes, "Scrooge was conscious of a thousand odors floating in the air, each one connected with a thousand thoughts and hopes and joys and cares long, long forgotten." Now, it's not all about having extra time. We can't afford to just sit on our porches all day contemplating life. But on the other hand, when it is safe to go back to work, to go back to life, whatever that means for each of us, will we lose what our senses have been opened up to in God's kingdom and on God's mountain? In the process of going back, whenever that's going to happen, maybe we don't need to rush down from that mountain or away from our backyard so quickly that we forget what it is that we have gained in this time away, in this time apart, and yet closer than we have ever been. If we go back to those wheels of industry that made us so exhausted in the first place, what has this season truly taught us? What are our treasures? And what have we chosen to serve? We all want to get back. And we know that doesn't look the same for everyone. But to try to simply go back to the way things used to be, what if Jesus is talking about something else on that mountain? Was any of Jesus' message about going back to the way things used to be? Jesus was always about making things new, or maybe to put it a better way, making things fulfilled. And that includes us. As United Methodists, our theology and practice of sanctification, of going on to perfection, is about moving in a direction which we experience God fulfilling us into the people we are truly supposed to be. Do we want that enough? Do we need that enough? That we are willing to stay on that mountain, in that backyard? Are we willing to stay with Jesus and continue to listen? Let us pray. Gracious and holy God, we confess to the times we have striven so hard to what we think will make us better, that will make us relevant, that will give us the attention we crave. We confess to those times in which we have not looked to you to know that we are worthy, that our fear, our uncertainty, the image that we have placed upon ourselves has led us through fear instead of faith. And so we ask that you help us to not run away from who you have called us to be, and that part of who you have called us to be is to simply and yet powerfully be loved by you. So as we choose to stay on that mountain, as we choose to open our senses and our spirits to your love for us, may we take that experience and share it with others so that all may know who we are truly supposed to be, that we are loved by you and we are called to love one another. It might be easy to argue that in many ways, Jesus wasn't really successful. He didn't have a great brand. He didn't have great marketing. In fact, I remember that famous line that is given in one of the gospel stories, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Jesus didn't have the greatest marketing plan. In fact, we might even argue that his mission failed in his crucifixion. And yet we are here today, thousands of years later. Why? Is it because of great advertisement that Jesus had? Or has his story, has his miracles, has who Jesus is changed us? We may not feel as though we are worthy most days. Worthy of God's love, worthy of the resurrection, worthy of sharing our story with someone else. But we are not in the business of being a business. We are in the business of sharing God's love with the world because it is first shared with us. That is what Jesus says at the end of the Gospel of Matthew. "Go now and share with the world what it is that I have shared with you." And all of us, each and every one of us, is worthy of sharing that story and that message of God's love. So let us go and truly be the people God has called us to be, a community of diverse disciples following Jesus Christ, whether it is on the mountain or in the streets or in our backyard. And let us always take the opportunity to share God's story. And may we go in peace. Amen.